Hey, welcome to the 411 Vodcast. I'm Marcus.
I'm Eddie.
Michelle.
I'm Diana.
And I'm Chris, and I'm really excited because we've got a very special guest.
Yeah, I'm Tyler Captain.
Tyler, tell us a little bit about how you ended up in this crazy little group and how you're involved in sort of knowing some of the folks here.
Yeah, well, I know Diana and Eddie and Chris from the Innovator program, the Google Education Innovator program. We met last summer. We spent three glorious days together in Washington, D.C. Yeah, that's where we met. It was a great experience, and I'm looking forward to talking to you guys again tonight.
Tell us a little bit about yourself outside of being a Google innovator. Give us a little bit of background. What are your passions in education? What do you got for us? Give us the back of the baseball card.
Well, I've been teaching for about 10 years, and now I'm teaching high school in Red Deer, Alberta. I'm a Canadian. I guess that's important. I'm passionate about innovation. That's kind of what drew me to the Google Innovator Program. Just trying some new things, solving problems in education, being creative, and collaborating with just some cool people like you guys.
Quick shout out to WDC17. What's up?
Yes, so I'm pumped to have Tyler here, WDC17. And I'm really excited because Tyler had a really cool growth mindset challenge that he did with his students. And we all thought it was a really creative and unique thing. And so, Tyler, I would love for you to share kind of what that was, what inspired that, and then what you did. Because I think that is pretty awesome.
Yeah, all right. No problem. At my school and in our high school, we talk a lot about growth mindset. And it was starting to feel like it was just, just becoming something we said. And it kind of lost its meaning. So me and a couple other teachers at the beginning of last school year came up with this idea of how to model a growth mindset and just make it more authentic, like show some empathy for our students too. And the basics of it was that we let our students give us a challenge to learn something over the course of the year, and throughout the year they'd hold us accountable and remind us to have a growth mindset, much like we do to them every day as their teachers. So they picked something that would be a challenge for us and something that we wouldn't have chosen on our own. So my students picked for me to learn how to sing opera, and for one of my other high school teachers, they made him learn how to dance ballet. So that's just a couple examples. But yeah, that's what it was like.
La donne mobile, quel più mal vento, muta de sento e di pensiero.
Yeah, when Chris and Diana and Eddie were telling Michelle and I about this this project, here's what I love about it. It's authenticity at its finest. It is taking every amount of hypocrisy out of the classroom, because the teachers are saying, we are truly going to own up and walk the walk. We are not just going to talk the talk. We're going to walk the walk. We are willing to put ourselves out there. And to me, if I'm a kid sitting in a classroom and I'm seeing and hearing a teacher willing to do this and following through, that's huge. That's bigger than any curriculum, any grandiose lesson. It's awesome. And that's the connection to kids that I think is just an amazing thing, and what I just love about the project.
Giving up control to the students was definitely a risk that we took. And yeah, it had its pros and it had its cons. It was really fun for the students to see their teachers just struggle all year to stick to it. And then, yeah, I guess the downside was that it was hard to get more teachers involved and to buy in, because not every teacher on staff was willing to participate with that level of risk. So what we changed about it this year, and you guys can give me some feedback on what you think, is we let the teachers who are participating to at least give some kind of guidelines or give a few options for the students to pick from. And yeah, there's some pros and cons, but I'll let me know what you guys think.
So I think that it's interesting, in order to get some more buy-in, you change your method to offer some choice for your teachers. So that kind of makes me think about two things. One, you know, what can we learn from how having choice as adults and students kind of impacts our learning? And then two, what are some other ways we can help encourage a growth mindset? And maybe it doesn't have to be a big project where everyone's learning something that really puts them out front and is a huge risk, but what are some other ways, what are some strategies we can implement into our classroom on a daily basis that can help students have a growth mindset and can help educators have a growth mindset?
Well, listening to Tyler and his experience last year, and then even starting out this year, I'm just hearing students in charge, even if in this case it's like bordering on sadistic. But ultimately they're kind of in control a little bit, and that's empowering. And you know, we talk about student choice and these other big topics, but you know, just the idea that they feel like they are in charge to some extent as to an outcome, and the roles are reversed to some extent. I think that's one good way to incorporate that into the classroom. Find options, find ways for kids to be, for students to be the ones that are in charge.
So yeah, another way I think you can encourage growth mindset, and I've seen it done really, really well. It's really cool in my son's elementary classroom, but is the power of the word yet. You know, so like they're not allowed to say, I can't do that. Instead, yet. I can't do that yet. And so to instill that in kids, especially at a younger age, kind of is empowering, in that, you know, you can do anything that you set your mind to. You just can't do it yet. And that's a really cool thing to say, because I think we as adults are like, you know, I'd like to do that, but I can't. And then to hear your 6-year-old come in and say, yet, you know, like, you're right. So.
Tyler, I think what you're, this project that you've done with your students, what that demonstrates is the power of teacher modeling. We too often want things for our students. We want them to take risks, to continually evolve, think about their work as opportunities to improve. But then we don't allow ourselves as educators that same vulnerability, I guess. And we don't allow ourselves to take risks too. But then I think from my perspective, being a professional developer working with staff, I think for us to cultivate that kind of mindset, we have to create professional learning experiences that also demonstrate a growth mindset and a learning alongside the teachers. That student-centered environment has to happen, even with teacher development. And I think when we can be vulnerable and we can take calculated risks and iterate and evolve and design programs and learning together with teachers, that transfer happens to the classroom a little bit easier. One, because you're able to experience that kind of environment as a student, but then additionally, you feel supported and like this safe environment has been created.
So, Michelle, why do you think that is? Why do you think that teachers don't allow themselves that vulnerability? Do you feel like they don't, like that would be just another thing added to their plate? Do you feel like they just don't have the energy or the time to learn something new? I'm just curious, like, what your thoughts are on why you think that is.
I think there is a lot of pressure to be an educator. And it's scary to try new things and to not be sure if it's going to work. And we've created this system which sends two opposing messages to teachers. We tell teachers we want them to innovate and to fail forward and try new things. But then we also say, hey, you've only got 1 year with these kids, and also they better pass this test, which doesn't allow a whole lot of room for failure. So in this age of accountability, I think it's really hard to feel safe and comfortable to take risks, even if they are calculated risks. So I think the system has to change, and I think that administrators and staff developers, I think we can play an important role in helping create that culture of innovation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so true, because the thing that always gets me is, you know, growing up, you know, the catchphrase, you know, you learn from your mistakes. And if you learn from your mistakes, why in education do we treat failure like the enemy? You know, like you said, we'll say things like fail forward, but in reality, like, the kids better do good on that test. And, you know, same thing, you know, from the student perspective, you know, like if they would fail a test that they bring up, the parents would be like, what in the world? You know, so we truly, even though we have the mantra, you know, learn from your mistakes, we really don't want mistakes. And I think that's sad. What is sort of, since Tyler, he's from Canada, what is sort of the, you know, teacher accountability system, or, you know, what's that like up north?
Well, that dichotomy that Michelle was talking about, just kind of the competing pressures on teachers to try new things and innovate on one hand, but then also to achieve high scores, high test scores with their students on the other hand, I think that's definitely there. I can't speak for like all of the country, but in our school division, anyways, I find that it feels like a pretty safe place to try new things, in general. And then I think as you go higher up in grades, like I said, I teach high school. It's just taken a little bit longer to overcome the tradition of, like, I guess, standardized testing and, just kind of these, there's a little bit less freedom to try some of those things, or at least it feels that way. But to me, that's kind of what makes it fun, is to push against those boundaries and those traditions and kind of show people that you can still learn while doing that.
Well, Tyler, first of all, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast and sharing some really great content and ideas and perspectives. But I feel obligated, since we're going international here, we're going to take the international vibe you're bringing, and we're going to combine it with the 411's love of food, and we're going to bring it all together. And so we want to shift gears here. We want to talk about weird food or weird food combinations that either are currently a thing or something that you grew up with. We've talked about this a bit in the past, and so we figured this would be a great time to hear that kind of perspective from you. So switch it up. Let's hear what you got, everybody.
I'll start us out. I hope my mom's not watching. If you are, Mom, I love you. I'm sorry. you fed me some weird stuff as a kid. And I think that I'm just now realizing it, that I ate really weird things as a child. That when I still have carried into adulthood, people look at me really strange when I do it. So, for instance, I feel like breakfast is one of maybe the worst. So, I recently was at breakfast with friends, got some hard-boiled eggs, and I did what I thought everybody did with their hard-boiled eggs, and I chopped it up with my fork, just mashed it to bits, put a ton of butter on it, and pepper, and was eating it while everyone stared in disgust at what I just put into my mouth. So I guess that's not a thing, but I ate that religiously as a child. It's pretty good. You guys should try it.
Yeah. Disgusting. Yeah, I'll go. Kraft singles cheese in the plastic, right? Take that bad boy out of there. And then I would fold it. I would fold that over and over and over and over again until you had a stack of like little tiny squares of Kraft singles cheese. And I just ate that.
Come on. Butter. Butter makes everything. It's like if anything's fried, it's going to be better. Butter, y'all.
Okay, Paula Deen.
Wait, I left something out. I would put an M&M in between two of those slices of cheese and eat that. Oh, so good.
An M&M all in the Kraft cheese? No. I've got a few. I'm going to give you one. Spam. You're welcome.
No, Marcus, it's a square, the little square that I created, slice, M&M, slice, into the mouth. I'm telling you, don't knock things until you try them.
Eddie, I was wondering what was so weird. So you ate cheese as a kid. You forgot the M&M part. That was an important detail.
Michelle, I have a similar story. To the, like, so, Mom, love you. But something that I thought that every kid on earth ate until I married my wife, and she was like, what? But then I think it's, like, a regional thing. So, like, I think some of the people that grew up near me may be like, yeah, we totally do this. So, chili, right? When you have chili, we would get a peanut butter sandwich with honey. So, my mom would mix honey with the peanut butter, and it would be this peanut butter honey sandwich. But we only ate it ever with chili. And I thought that, like, that was, like, you know, it went together like peas and carrots, even though. But, like, that, like, yeah, when you had chili, you had the peanut butter honey sandwich. And it's delicious. And it's good with the chili. But, like, that was a thing. And my wife was like, what?
Do you mean it goes together like chili and cornbread?
Can someone back me up that they had the peanut butter and honey sandwich with some chili? Or am I?
Peanut butter sandwich with chili, I think, is maybe a regional thing. I feel like that's always a meal at Indiana cafeterias at schools. I don't know. Just saying. My second is macaroni and cheese with Kraft macaroni and cheese with tuna. All in there. A can of tuna in with the mac and cheese. I got one more.
Shout out to the Rushville Lions. At lunch, when we had chili, at lunch, even when I worked there as a teacher, peanut butter and honey with the chili. So, it's a thing. But I don't feel like it's that gross. So, we'll let that slide.
Yeah, this is like you guys all saying soda instead of pop. I'm so, like, my mind is blown up north. Like, that is not, I didn't even know that was a thing.
No, don't be putting that tuna in the mac and cheese. No, stop. Why? Why are we ruining food? And so far, Tyler has said nothing in all of this. And they, like, have the weirdest food combination of all.
I think it's weird. Did anybody else's parents let them pile on sugar onto their cereal just like scoops. Like I had a measuring cup that I would fill with sugar and put it on my cornflakes. I was a really unhealthy breakfast eater.
You guys are some like cuisine experts here, and I can honestly say most of it sounds pretty good. Peanut butter honey on bread, that's awesome. Chili is awesome. Maybe not together, but I'll try it next time. I'm having a hard time thinking of some weird stuff, but I eat a lot of mousse. Have you guys ever had mousse?
Like dessert mousse? Or like mousse? Yeah.
DG just did the international sign. Like,
he just said, I'm having trouble coming up with some weird stuff, but I eat a lot of mousse, and I'm almost certain he was talking about the Canadian animal.
Y'all know I'm vegetarian, right?
Ugh.
I don't eat anything weird, just mousse. What?
Okay, I feel like he might just... I think he's trying to freak us out. Anyway, since we're talking breakfast food mostly, I remember a conversation when we were at Innovator in DC, and we were talking about how people in the States love biscuits and gravy. And if I remember correctly, you said that you had never had biscuits and gravy. And we had this conversation over a bunch of plates of poutine, which is a delicious concoction of yummy things from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I remember that conversation, and biscuits and gravy, like I know what those two things are, but I think someone showed me a picture and it was just, I don't know, that looked kind of disgusting. But separately, biscuits are fine and gravy is good on things like mousse. And obviously poutine is pretty awesome.
Tyler, thank you so much for being a part of this. We'll make a deal with you. You try some biscuits and gravy, and Eddie will try some mousse and gravy. And we just wanted to thank you for being a part of this. So,
and that's the 411.